Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Emory-Riddle Aeronautical University's Worldwide Campus, offering a range of online programs that allow students to earn a degree in aviation, engineering, business, and beyond from anywhere. More at erau.edu/ww.
I'm Sharon Stone. This is Engage. The number of people executed after being sentenced to the death penalty is increasing in Florida. So far this year, the state has executed 10 people. That's more than all other states combined. Inmates in their 70s and 80s who have been on death row for decades are being executed. Prosecutors are starting to pursue the death penalty in cases that do not involve murder, including a Sanford man facing dozens of charges involving sex crimes with children. William Shiner is state attorney of Florida's 18th Judicial Circuit that serves Seminole and Brevard counties. He discusses how the decision to pursue the death penalty is made.
It's a quick process. It's something that happens at the very beginning of the case. Florida law requires us to make that determination in the first 45 days from arraignment. So grand jury indicts, if it's a first-degree murder, once they're arraigned on that charge, I have 45 days to make that decision if we're going to pursue the death penalty or not. Florida statutes provides a list of aggravating factors that a jury can consider. It's a very specific list, and there has to be one of those aggravators present in order to seek the death penalty on a first-degree murder charge. So we look at those things. Was the victim a law enforcement officer? Was the victim particularly vulnerable? Was the crime heinous, atrocious, or cruel? Was it particularly violent? Did it involve a child? Did it involve torture? Was it a quick death? Was it a painful death? All of those kind of things go into the legal determination of it. And then in Florida, victims have rights and survivors have rights. And so before any decision is made on whether to file the death penalty or not, there's a conversation that is had between my trial lawyers and the survivors of the homicide to find out what their wishes are. Those things are then balanced and the case is presented to me by the trial lawyers, or it's a case that I'm involved in from the beginning. And that decision is ultimately made to pursue the death penalty or not at that juncture. They're typically the cases that you would expect. The small children that are drowned by their parents or harmed by somebody. It's a particularly violent kidnapping. Those kind of things, we pretty well know that, you know, that's going to be looked at really hard to see if there's a reason not to pursue the death penalty. At the same time, we do engage in mitigation review. Defense attorneys will often send us mitigation early to try to get us to consider whether or not the death penalty is appropriate. Could be mental health. It could be their upbringing. It could be circumstances. It could be that they have a viable defense to the charge. And so it shouldn't be first-degree murder. It should be something else. And we will always listen to that as well so that we can make the decision that's appropriate. The thing that's important to note is we have 45 days to make that call. If we don't make it, and we need leave of the court at a later date in order to pursue the death penalty sometime later. That's probably the biggest change that has been in recent years.
I'm just so curious, is that just personally hard for you, or is that your job?
I mean, if you take a step back, William Shiner, the human being, just like anybody else, it's not easy to put someone in prison for the rest of their lives. It's certainly not easy to sentence them to death. Will Shiner, the prosecutor, I don't have any qualms whatsoever about pursuing it or doing it. People that engage in this type of conduct, their punishment is frankly earned. And it's up to a jury of 12 to determine if that sentence is appropriate or not. So just because I pursue death as an option doesn't mean that that's going to be the sentence. It's basically me saying to the community, this is up to you guys to decide if death is appropriate. I believe it should be an option in sentencing, and those options should be limited to life in prison or the death penalty. And as long as it's the law in Florida, we're going to pursue it on the cases that warrant it.
Your office is seeking the death penalty against Daniel Rodriguez of Sanford. He's accused of raping children and dozens of other sex crimes involving kids. But this is the first time you're pursuing the death penalty under Florida's law in a case that does not involve a murder charge. How do you decide whether a crime meets that threshold for seeking the death penalty when there's not a murder?
This case was investigated by the Seminole County Sheriff's Department. My team was brought in very early in that investigation, and we kind of identified it at the very beginning that this could be one of those cases where death is appropriate. You know, there are certain facts. So in the first degree murder realm, you only need one aggravating factor in order to pursue the death penalty. In order to sentence someone to death for a non-death case, so a non-first degree murder, and in this case, it's what we call capital sexual battery, there has to be two aggravating factors present. And those aggravating factors are different than the aggravating factors for first degree murder, that are slightly different. And that's important because one of the aggravating factors that are present is the relationship of the offender to the child and then the age of the child, right? So if we say we only need one, then by definition, every capital sexual battery case involves a death option because they all involve a child of a tender age. The legislature and the governor signed it into law, said we need one more aggravator. And in this particular case, the nature and prolonged abuse indicate that at the time that he's convicted, and if he gets convicted of this, he will have been convicted of multiple capital sexual batteries. And because there are multiple capital sexual batteries, that in and of itself is an aggravator. And so, you know, that decision was made with the highest ranked members of my team in the Seminole County office, along with some of the best investigators the state has working with the Seminole County Sheriff's Department, that this was the appropriate decision to make. And that's why we elected into it.
Some Florida death row inmates are now in their 70s and 80s when their execution date arrives.
Yeah.
Why do we see inmates on death row for 30, 40 years before the execution happens?
What I can tell you is that from the point of conviction and sentence, so we had one last year, a young man was convicted and sentenced to death for killing his pregnant girlfriend or former girlfriend. At the moment he gets convicted, he gets assigned what's called collateral counsel or appellate counsel. And that appellate counsel will stay with him for the entire pendency of his case. And his case will be reviewed immediately by the Supreme Court of Florida to make sure that the facts, evidence, and law, there were no issues and errors, and that the facts sufficient and warrant the death penalty. So that'll be his first immediate review. And then it'll transition in what we call post-conviction relief and attacks. There'll be attacks on his trial counsel. There'll be attacks on the court. There'll be attacks on the prosecutors in order to try to overturn the conviction. And that litigation will go on for years. He will be represented by multiple different lawyers, but he will always be represented as long as death is on the table. And that's just to ensure the integrity of the conviction. It's part of the process. So that takes time, that takes years, and there's a lot of them. The other aspect to it is that there is a complete separation between my office, the judiciary, and the governor's office in determining who gets selected for the death penalty. When a death warrant is signed, a copy is sent directly to me, directly to the sentencing judge, and then orders are put in place where we conduct one last series of hearings at the trial court level to determine that it's appropriate to proceed with the death penalty. So all of that takes a long time. The attorney general's office is involved. My office is involved. The governor's office is involved. The Office of Capital Collateral Counsel is involved. Sometimes the public defender or prior counsel are involved for the trial. And so it can be a very litigious thing that happens from the point of conviction and sentence to the ultimate execution. It's been said by one of my prosecutors and others, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, justice delayed is justice denied. I wish it didn't take so long. I wish survivors didn't pass away before they saw justice carried out, but it's a necessary function to make sure that we've gotten it right. Do I think it takes too long? It absolutely takes too long.
So Florida recently executed a 74-year-old. An 80-year-old is scheduled for death on July 28th. Does an inmate's age at the time of execution matter?
I don't think their age in of itself matters. I think that, you know, there are other things that the Constitution protects, but, you know, your age itself, absent being a juvenile, it's not a disbarment from the death penalty.
There are two people scheduled for death on July 28th. And the governor has accelerated the pace of executions. Do you have any concerns about the speed with which these are happening?
I don't. And the reason I don't is because all the things I just talked about, the post-conviction litigation that occurs, the most recent one from my circuit was over 30 years worth of litigation from the point of sentence to the point of execution And they're represented by highly competent and skilled counsel through the whole way. And as they get towards the end of sentence, they are represented by people that work at Capital Collateral, that are death qualified, that this is all they do, is perfect the record and make sure that everything is done the way it's supposed to be done and nothing is done out of course or rushed or any of those things. The point of a death warrant being signed, we're really at the last moments, and the trial court will have the defense attorneys or the Capital Collateral attorneys say, this is your time to file your last motions, whatever they may be. And that's what we do for the last 45 days when the death warrant is signed.
What does the future of capital punishment look like in Florida?
You know, it's here. I mean, I think that facts render an outcome. I think that if you talk to people and you give them a certain fact pattern, they're going to tell you, and their response will be that death is appropriate. I think that that's more common than ever. I think that it is one of those things that are here. Whether or not the court changes, 5-10 years ago, I didn't think we would have done the cycle that we have done with the death penalty, with the Hearst cases and things like that. But here we are. We've gone to unanimous, to it's not constitutional on the statute as written, to now it can be the 8-4. And so we have this cycle and we go around. You know, my expectation is in Florida, it's going to be the law, and it's going to be the law for the foreseeable future. And the fact that the governor passed the law on the death penalty for capital sexual battery is kind of an indication that the community supports this being an option for the worst of the worst. What do you do in a case where 3, 4, 5 people are killed? Life is appropriate for the first one and maybe for the second one, but how do you punish for the 3rd, 4th, and 5th death? And how do I say that to a survivor? And as long as that's an option, the death is going to be an option, and it'll be up for the jury and the judge to decide if it's appropriate.
That was State Attorney William Shiner of Florida's 18th Judicial Circuit that serves Seminole and Brevard. Governor Ron DeSantis has defended the state's use of the death penalty. Here's part of what he said in November about his support for capital punishment.
Now, there's a lot that goes into it before it ever gets on my desk. I think that should happen quick, because I do think the death penalty could be a strong deterrent if you had this stuff happen quicker. And there's some instances where you know, somebody goes and shoots 10 people, they should get the death penalty very quickly. And so I think it's been tough for a lot of the families. And so, you know, we were getting feedback, and, you know, it was all, you know, I kind of felt like I may have been letting some of them down. It wasn't intentional. There were a lot of other things that happened. So what we're doing is we're doing it to be able to bring justice to the victims' families. And I think it's important.
Yesterday, I spoke with Maria DeLiberato, a senior counsel with the ACLU's Capital Punishment Project, and policy director for Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, who is critical of what she says is a lack of transparency and the use of executions.
If we just looked at specific facts, it's certainly easy for the state to point out horrific murder cases that they feel justify the death penalty. But of course, every murder is awful and the loss of every human life is really significant. And yet there's a lot of specific law about what is required and when it's appropriate. And in Florida, it's sort of important to note that the default punishment is life without the possibility of parole. So other states have, you know, lesser sentences as alternatives. But in Florida, there's only two options, the death penalty or life without the possibility of parole. And so when you think about the death penalty and the sort of promises, and I put promises in quotes, that it purports to deliver is really, you know, retribution, deterrence, all of those things. Those arguments really all fail if you actually look at the evidence. I've been doing this a really long time and I've talked to lots of folks, murder victim family members, prosecutors. I've been a prosecutor. It's really just about vengeance, right? Understandably so, when there's a loss of life, there is an immediate visceral human reaction that says, I want someone else to suffer that same harm. And that's just something that we can't ignore and we shouldn't. But then the question becomes, how do you get justice? And what is justice? And justice, is that the death penalty and this sort of long drawn out process that's unfair and arbitrary? And some people get the death penalty and some people don't. And so I think when you start adding the like human frailties of our criminal legal system, that's when it really becomes an indefensible position. Certainly understand the visceral desire for it.
Florida has carried out executions at a faster pace recently than we've seen in decades. Any thoughts on what that says about capital punishment in the state? What kind of questions does that raise for you?
I think it's interesting because the administration certainly wants people to believe that that's what the people of the state of Florida want. And I think that's absolutely false. And the evidence that I have to point to that is if you look at jury verdicts and jury sentencing, there was a really brutal case in Orlando where the jury chose life after hearing all of the facts, right? So you get people get sound bites on the news, they get sound bites of a horrible crime, and they're like, oh, that deserves the death penalty. But when you actually listen to, well, who was the person that committed this crime? How did they get to a place where they committed such a brutal crime? And then they choose life, and they're choosing life at a higher rate than the execution suggests. Florida has not had a unanimous death sentence this entire year, which means, you know, Florida doesn't require unanimity anymore in light of what the Supreme Court has said. But Florida has not had a single unanimous death sentence. So that tells me that Floridians, everyday Floridians who are our jurors, don't support the death penalty once they're given all of the facts. Certainly sound bites and politicians talking about brutal crime and a long time and delay, that's going to make somebody have a gut reaction, exactly how you started this interview, which is like, well, that's a bad crime. You should have the death penalty. But if you look at actual juror verdicts, it's remarkable that in this execution pace, we have not seen a single unanimous death sentence, which means in no other state in the country would there be death, right? Florida and Alabama are the only two that allow non-unanimous, but Alabama is 10 to 2.
Recently, Florida executed a 74-year-old, and an inmate in his 80s is scheduled to die this month. Does age change your view of what punishment is appropriate?
I think when you're talking about age, again, we go back to what is the death penalty purport to promise in terms of justice? And, you know, somebody who is 80 years old, who's lived in prison for 40 years without causing harm, who's atoned for the crime that they've committed, who's a different person, killing that person, it just doesn't serve any legitimate purpose. So it's not even, it's not like we're saying, oh, well, you should, you know, there should be some age cutoff or something. It's just when you look at what are the reasons and the purported reasons behind the purpose of the death penalty? None of those are met when we're killing septuagenarians and octogenarians.
Some concerns have been raised about transparency around Florida's execution process. Can you talk to me about what information you think people should have access to that they don't?
Yeah, Florida is really, really one of the worst states in terms of lack of transparency. I practice now in my role at the ACLU, you know, in other states as well. A couple of things. One, the secrecy in which executions and people are selected for execution is done is an absolute secret. And that is unique to Florida. So in Florida, the governor has the sole discretion who to choose, when to choose, and when to set. And repeatedly, lawyers have asked for records around that, and they've been totally denied. So we have no idea why he chooses one person versus another. You know, we've collected, I'll call it anecdotal evidence, right? There was a family earlier this year, who sent a box of Sharpies to the governor's office. You know, he sort of notoriously signs death warrants with a blue Sharpie, and they sent a box of Sharpies to the governor with their loved one's name on it in an effort to spur that execution. It worked. The governor set the execution. Now, the governor's office may say, well, we were planning to do that anyway, but when they're secret about it and when they don't answer the questions of how are they choosing and why are they choosing, we're left to speculate. So I think that is sort of the number one lack of transparency. And then with respect to the lethal injection process, they make every effort to keep secret the status of their drug supply, whether it's expired, unexpired, how they're getting the drugs, whether they're being tested. They're completely silent about that. And courts have routinely denied public records with respect to that. They also, even though there was a lot of irregularity in terms of timing, in terms of movement, there was evidence of flash pulmonary edema in multiple executions, which is not supposed to be the mechanism of death. The state continues to hide that information and the courts continue to let them hide it. So I think we have sort of twofold. One, the process itself by which how executions are selected, how people are selected for the death penalty, and then the actual process itself. And they do not allow either the defense or the prosecutors or the media to witness the IV insertion process. There are some states where that is permitted. And so basically in Florida, when an execution starts, everyone is seated in the chamber in the witness gallery, and the curtain to the chamber rises, and the client is already on the gurney covered with a sheet, and IV access is already established. So if there had been difficulty in achieving IV access, which is very common, that's all done in secret.
What would you say to the families who do want this, who do look forward to this as closure?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm never going to argue with a family member that's lost a loved one. And if these executions do, in fact, bring them a measure of peace, I've had a number of clients executed who hoped for that, right? They obviously wanted to live and they didn't want to die, but they were like, I hope at least my death brings the family the peace or closure that they want. Like, I know everyone wants the public to believe that these men on death row are monsters, and they're just not. I mean, it's just not true. They committed monstrous acts, many of them, but they're not monsters. And so I certainly hope that the family members who do want this to happen or believe that they want this to happen feel the sense of ease and relief that they do it. That's all I would want for my fellow citizens.
Maria DeLiberato is Policy Director for Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Engage is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Richard Copeland is our senior producer. I'm Sharon Stone. You can reach us anytime with questions, comments, or story ideas. Send an email to engage@cfpublic.org. Thanks for listening.